open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
And now that we've opened the door, it is once again time to talk Twilight Zone with Bobby, Kitty, and Ken. Here's your host, Bobby Neer. Good evening, Bob.
Good evening, Dan, and hello to Kitty and Ken and our listeners. We are here this evening, as we are on alternating Tuesdays, to continue our episode-by-episode deconstruction of The Twilight Zone. We are up to episode number 7, entitled Escape Clause, a bizarre little tale of a frightened man who makes the deal of what turns out to be a thousand lifetimes with a jolly fat man with the improbable name of Cadwallader. As usual, there are deals behind deals and consequences for this kind of thing. So here is Kitty with details on the deal behind the deal. Kitty?
Yeah, hi, Bob. This is kind of an interesting episode. We have this old man played by David Wayne, and he basically, it starts out where he is in bed and a doctor is looking after him, and basically the doctor is telling him there's really nothing seriously wrong with him, and he's all upset because nobody is taking him seriously when he says he's ill. And so the wife shows the doctor out, and he accuses his wife of not caring about him and everything. I mean, he's really kind of an unlikable guy here. It's kind of hard to have a lot of sympathy for him. And then all of a sudden, this jolly old guy appears in his bedroom. And he seems harmless enough, but he tells this man that he can grant him his wish, that he'll live forever. And David Wayne thinks that's just a fabulous idea. And the only thing it's going to cost him is his soul. Well, he doesn't see what the problem is, because if he's going to live forever, then he doesn't have to worry about dying. But then the guy said that there is an escape clause, and he tells him that upon his request, he can grant him a major heart attack and he'll die. But he, of course, doesn't think he's ever going to want to die. So we then see him doing some pretty quirky things here. He's doing everything he can to cheat death. He's jumping in front of probably every car and bus and truck in the city, and he's getting all these settlements. I mean, they said that he's got like 14 settlements where he's making all kinds of money because he figures this is a way to get rich quick. But that doesn't seem to be sufficient. He's already bored with living forever because he can't die. So he's already bored. And so he decides to go up to the top of the building, and he's going to jump off the building to see what that's like. Now, his wife, this poor woman, she just doesn't know what to make of any of this. Her husband is jumping in front of subways and trucks and everything out there, and she's just shocked that he hasn't been killed, and he's tempting fate, and she's just terrified that he's going to end up getting killed. And so she follows him up to the roof because she thinks that he's truly lost his mind at this point, because he wants to jump off the roof. Well, she gets between him and the roof, and she loses her balance, and she falls off the roof. And boy, this guy, what a husband. He doesn't even feel all that bad that his wife fell off the roof. So what does he do? He decides that he wants to see what it's like to die in the electric chair. So he calls the police and tells them that he killed his wife, even though he really didn't. She just kind of lost her balance. He didn't actually push her or anything, but he admits to doing it. So the prosecuting attorney wants to pursue the death penalty, and initially they're going to, it looks like he's going to get the death penalty, and then all of a sudden at the last minute his defense attorney comes through and his sentence is commuted to life in prison without parole. And he's just devastated to hear this because he can't die. So he's going to be stuck in this jail cell forever. And at that point, the jolly old man, who we have now come to realize is actually the devil, he comes and he's laughing, and he asks him if he wants to take advantage of the escape clause. And he tells him yes. And so he vanishes, and this man has a massive heart attack, and he dies. And kind of an interesting episode from a couple of standpoints. When I first saw it, I thought, you know, kind of reminds me of a couple of old sayings. One is, sometimes God punishes you and gives you exactly what you want. And the other one is that if you make a deal with the devil, you better expect to get burned. In this case, he got what he wanted, but it wasn't sufficient for him. I mean, he looked at it as a form of punishment because life basically had no meaning for him anymore. Even when he was raking in all this money, apparently it had no meaning for him. I mean, even when his wife dies, it has no meaning for him, which was really sad. So you really don't have a lot of sympathy for this guy at the end. He was pretty self-centered, but I found the episode entertaining. I believe I ranked it a 3 for a good episode. What do you say, Bobby?
That can give his opinion.
Okay, what do you say, Ken?
Well, it's an okay episode for a one-time viewing only. You know, the very first time I saw it, a little intrigue. I liked the guy who played the devil, the fat guy. He was pretty good. But I did not like the Wayne character. Because when I'm watching something, I want to like the guy who's playing the main part. And I didn't like him, especially that scene with the wife. That was depressing, and that just kind of threw me off a loop. And then the rest of the episode, you know, eventually, you know, you kind of wonder what's going to happen. He keeps doing all these odd things. And then in the jail cell, he just kind of leans over and dies. So I rated it a 2, gave it some average. It wasn't totally lousy. But to me, the key in this series, and whatever movie I watch or whatever television show I watch, the key for me is, after viewing it the first time, do I want to see it the second time, maybe down the road sometime? Do I want to watch a movie that I like? Do I want to see it the second time? That's when I give good ratings. And on this episode, I say one time, that's enough. I could care less about it. If it comes on the marathon and I see it, I'm going to switch the channel. So that's my opinion.
Well, I have lots of issues with this that are a lot deeper than that. But before I get to them, let me just say this. I think that Ken takes this whole series a little too seriously. It's just fantasy. And that's all it is. You know, I never really considered The Twilight Zone to be science fiction. Because in science fiction, there is some science fact in order to get to the fiction. In The Twilight Zone, not in every episode, but in many of them, it's pure fantasy. Things happen that make no sense, that could never happen, and that's all it is. So I tend to rate episodes based on the fact that it is fantasy and not take it too literally. This is one of those episodes that's simply ridiculous, but I gave it a 3. I might have given it a 4. Some people did. Except that there are just too many unanswered questions and too many strange behavior on the part of the main characters for me to take it that far. And that's the problem that I have with it. Because even in fantasy, there's got to be something there to link to. So let me just start out with this. So Walter Boedeker starts to steer the story out by being an obvious hypochondriac, maybe the world's biggest hypochondriac. he's in bed, he doesn't want the window open, he's got pills around him, the doctor's there, he's perfectly all right, and he simply is convinced that he's sick. Well, there's a lot of people in the world like that. I've even been like that myself from time to time. So if that happens, it's not that unusual. So if, but my, here's my question. He makes the deal with the devil or whoever that's supposed to be to live forever. Why, after he makes the deal with this person, does he feel so compelled to prove it to the rest of the world? I mean, it's a big leap from being a frightened little man in bed to throwing open the window and throwing your pills out there and then deciding that you simply must prove to everybody else that you can't be hurt. I don't understand that, because in a hypochondriac might just be happy to know that now he's not going to get sick. Kitty, isn't that asking a little much here from this character?
Well, I got the impression from him initially that the reason he was doing all of that was because he wanted to rake it. That was his way of raking in a lot of money in a short period of time. So I really didn't think too much about that. It wasn't towards the end until when he realized that, you know, getting all this money was, as far as he was concerned, worthless, which is unfortunate because he certainly could have done many good things with the money. He certainly could have even made himself comfortable with it. He could have taken his poor wife on a cruise. I mean, this woman's been putting up with his complaining for who knows how long, and yet he continues to treat his wife like garbage. And you know, and then all of a sudden he decides he wants to see what it's like to jump off of a roof. And that's where you really start to see that he's going off the deep end. It isn't just about the money anymore. It's just about how he realizes that because he can't be killed, life has no meaning.
Yeah, but Kitty, it doesn't start that way. The story doesn't start with any desire. I could have understood if the story had started with this man, this unpleasant man, who announces to his wife that he's bored with life. Everything about it is boring him. Then I could understand that he's looking for a thrill. And the thrill would be, now he can throw himself in front of trains and things, and he'll get a thrill out of that. But that's not how the story starts. The story starts with a hypochondriac. Ken, don't you agree that he had basic needs at the beginning, and he turned on them right away, don't you think?
Yes, right away he just turns into kind of like a different person, right?
Yeah, because a hypochondriac is scared of everything. Now all of a sudden he's scared of nothing.
Yeah, it was opposite. And so that was a little strange, but I didn't like the guy. As you're watching this guy, did you like him? No.
No, and I didn't like him at all, but that's the problem. I think that it should have been made clear at the beginning of the story, as the story begins, that he's a very unlikable character. I can't criticize for people for being hypochondriacs. Some people just are, and I don't think they deserve all that much criticism. It's a pity if you can't deal with that, but I tend to be a little more sympathetic to that. So the story starts with me thinking to myself, well, this poor man, he's locked himself in his bedroom, and he's never going to do anything, all because, as the doctor says to him, it's all in your head. There's nothing wrong with you. And so, yeah, I think he's very unpleasant, but he doesn't get unpleasant until later. So I would have preferred for him to be unpleasant in the beginning. So you got this man laying there being, and here's another thing. You can't really convince hypochondriacs of anything. If he couldn't be convinced by the doctor that there was nothing wrong with him, even after he makes the deal, I don't think he's going to be convinced. It's not quite that easy, not if he's got that in his mind. All right, I have other issues about this, but we're up against a break, and when we come back, we'll pick it up where we left off.
Okay, Bob, we will indeed. Back with more Talking Twilight Zone right after we see what Susan McRae has to offer on ShareVision Radio.
Hi everyone, I'm Susan McRae, host of Getting to Know You. My guest next Tuesday? Well, all I have to say is her name, Susan Anton. She's long epitomized female talent and beauty. Everyone knows she's a stunning musical talent. She's appeared on television, in films, and on Broadway. And if you've ever seen her perform live, you will agree, she lights up the stage. So join me Tuesday, 6:30 p.m. Pacific, 9:30 p.m. Eastern, when Susan Anton joins me, Susan McCrae, on Getting to Know You, here on KSAV.org, ShareAvision Radio Network. We are in the air everywhere. Right here on the internet.
And I have seen Susan Anton on stage, and she truly is excellent. This will be a great program tonight. More Talking Twilight Zone. Here's Bobby.
Thanks, Dan. A futuristic convicted murderer is sentenced to life on an asteroid without any companionship and learns the hard way the nuts and bolts of living alone until he is given the gift of a beautiful woman. Problem is, she's made exactly of that, nuts and bolts. Jack Warden guest stars as The Lonely, episode 8, 2 weeks from tonight on Talking Twilight Zone. This programming note, our show that night will sound a little different. Seems that Kitty will be away that week on a well-deserved vacation. She'll be taking a cruise to Alaska, supposedly to see the sights, but Ken and I know better that she's really going to help Sarah Palin decide what to do now that she's no longer governor. Kitty will return 2 weeks after that for our next program.
Oh, I don't think she needs my help.
I don't know about that. In the meantime, Ken and I will welcome a special guest reviewer to take over for that one program, Lynn Carpenter, who sends emails in each week and has called into the show before, has very graciously accepted our invitation to co-host on that program, and she will be sitting in for Kitty. And speak of the devil, as we are tonight, here is Kitty with this week's email from Lynn on Escape Clause. Kitty?
Okay, her response on this is, interesting episode, a weird but almost predictable story, a hypochondriac who sells his soul to the devil for immortality. What a precious gift. He tries to cash in on it in every way he can. Did anyone notice that the second claims adjuster was the guy from McHale's Navy, Joe Flynn? But it doesn't work out in his favor. He killed his wife, not intentionally, but he showed no remorse over her death. He thought he could get away with this crime. Oh, well, the best laid plans of mice and men don't always work out, do they?
Thanks, Kitty. I want to continue with a few other thoughts that I have on this, because you mentioned his purpose for doing this is to collect money. But I got to tell you, not only is Baedeker obnoxious, he's also the dumbest man I've ever seen in my life. For instance, how is he going to make any money off of this? Ken, don't you just love the scene there with the insurance men and the underwriters are in his house handing him out checks? Since when did they do that so easily? For one thing, he jumped off the platform at the subway right in front of the train. There's no witnesses. Everybody saw him jump himself. So how is he going to get any money for any of that? And how long can he continue that scam? How long before they get together and decide not to pay him anything? Doesn't that sound ridiculous?
Yeah, life insurance. There's a lot of scam with that. You know, people have gotten away with that. You know, where you die, and yet they go hide in some country. The wife gets the money, and she mails some of the money to the guy who died and all that. You know,
but Ken, he intends to do this over and over again.
Yeah.
But actually, Bob, I don't think that was life insurance money he was collecting.
I understand that.
Yeah, he was collecting a settlement from the people.
Exactly. And how long? How many times did he intend to get away with that?
Well, I know. You know, I did think it was a little odd because they said that was like his 14th time.
Yeah, well, it's ridiculous.
I was thinking you would think that somebody would kind of start to want to start investigating this guy.
Well, I don't know how he could collect for the one thing there when he jumps off the platform, because I've watched the episode twice in the past 2 days, and it's obvious that he jumps off himself. So I don't know where the witnesses are when the insurance companies or whatever do their investigation. They're going to want to know exactly what was this accident that was their fault, their client's fault, that caused him to be injured, and he isn't even injured. He doesn't have a scratch on him. He didn't get killed. So this money thing sounds ridiculous to me. I don't see how he's going to make any money out of that at all. Then we have this big deal with his wife, and of course he doesn't lay hand on her up on the rooftop. He never touches her at all. So he did not murder her at all. He simply calls up the police and says to them that he killed his wife. And from there, we leap all the way to him getting the death penalty. That's why I didn't give this episode a bigger rating, because this is a little too much for me to overlook. I usually will overlook all this stuff, but this is just a little too much. I mean, now he gets the death penalty for a murder he never committed. And the big deal, apparently the big surprise here, is supposed to be when it comes down, he's positive he'll get the death penalty. And he tells his lawyer that they'll just get a big electric bill if they try to put him in the electric chair. And it turns out, as you've already said, that the judge gives him life imprisonment. I watched 10 million lawyer shows during my lifetime, but I guess I didn't learn anything about it. Can't you demand to be your own lawyer? He didn't need a lawyer at all, did he?
That's true. I mean, he could have acted in his own defense. I mean, so it is kind of odd that he allowed the lawyer to be there to argue for him.
Right, because the lawyer says to him, I knew we could do it. And I'm thinking to myself, do what? His whole purpose of being there is to get the death penalty. So what's he doing working with his lawyer to try to get... that doesn't even make any sense. There are a lot of things he could have insisted to be his own lawyer. They would have tried to talk him out of it. But as far as I know, you have the right to do that if you want to. Mm-hmm. Unless they think you're insane or something. And even then, I think you're allowed to do it. So that's just a basic right in court for people. If you want to tell your lawyer to get lost, then you do. And you can, you know, that's what you want. Here's a man who desperately wants to get convicted. I would have thought the first thing he would have said is, no lawyer, thank you, because this trial is going the way I want it to go. Even if that had been the case, that he had to have a lawyer, he could have done other things during the trial that would have antagonized the judge to the degree he would have gotten the death penalty, such as disrupting the trial and all kinds of other things that would have made the judge give him the death penalty. Ken, don't you think relatively easy to get the death penalty, isn't it?
Yeah, especially in Texas, state of Texas, you can get it.
Yes, indeed.
California, they won't execute anybody here too hard. But actually, the end is kind of predictable, and I tell you what, this episode is not really entertaining to watch if you think about it. Because, okay, the Thomas Gomez character, the devil... All right, he says, all right, this is the deal we're going to make. So as a viewer, you're watching and you go, you know what? The devil's going to win in the end, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's no surprise, really. It's just how the episode plays out, all the silly things going on, and then the final scene in the jail, so it gives him the heart attack, kind of leans over, and the end of the episode. So, look at it. I consider myself, we were talking earlier about maybe I take these episodes too literally or when I watch TV or movies. But Bob, my main point is this. I need to be entertained, okay? And I'm not just a zombie on my couch. I've got a lot of other things I can be doing. If I'm going to turn that TV set on, you got to give me the best of what you got. I've said that before. And this episode did not give me the best. Now, Bob, I got to ask you this question. It was not the ending very predictable. The devil is going to win.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
actually,
you can see it coming, but
I said... When I first saw this episode, I thought the way it was going to end was just that he was going to be stuck in prison forever and ever. I mean, actually, I think that would have been a better ending for him to just end up...
No escape clause at all. No escape clause at all, right?
Well, on the other hand, the devil could have come up to him and said, oh, I was just kidding about the escape clause. Hope you like your accommodation.
Yeah, that would have been a lot worse. But I would say this to Ken about in his comments, and that is the fact that, and I've said this on the show before, that when you watch The Twilight Zone, it's best not to think too much. Because the stories are predictable, yes. And you can figure out where they're going, many of them. But I always felt I was just 12 years old when this played, so I thought it was easy for me. I had low attention span anyway. But if you're an adult, especially now that we're in 2009, and you've seen so much, and you go, look, I know where this is going. Who's kidding me? So the only way to watch the show, really, is to throw that out and simply say, okay, look, just take me where you're taking me. Maybe it'll be entertaining, maybe it won't. That's what I do. I mean, I know all the stories now. If I did not, I would say I prefer just to not to think too hard about that. This is one of those shows I'm not sure you want to think about. I want to mention one or two other things because we're almost running out of time. At the very end there, when he decides to use the escape clause, why so quickly? Because, you know, he says, first of all, one of the guards comes and says, you can do 30, 40, 45 years easily. At the beginning of the story, Rod Serling says he's 44 years old. In 1959, people weren't living as long as they are now. Women weren't living to almost 80. Men weren't living till the late 70s. So actually, Walter will be lucky if he gets 30 years. It may be 20 or 25. He's already 44. And it's 1959. It's not 2009. Lifespans have gone up a lot since then. So he doesn't have that long anyway. But why give up so quickly? There are appeals. There are other things that can be done. Kitty, I don't think he gave up really quick. Why not just try the appeal just to see what happens?
Yeah, that's true. Say he changes his story and to say that, he didn't kill his wife. She fell accidentally.
Well, that's what I mean. You never know what's going to happen. Anybody ever hear of Charles Manson? He was convicted to die, and we had that Supreme Court thing, and now he's still sitting in jail. So you can't really be that sure about that. One other quick question from both of you. There's not a lot of time to answer it, but take out the crime, take out and everything. Literally, would you really have, if you had the chance, not everybody, but only you, would you really want to live forever? Is there a downside to living forever? What do you think, Ken?
Well, if you could live in Hawaii and no job, no bills, no money, live forever? Maybe.
Really?
That's what I was thinking. If you have a, you can't die.
But isn't the fact that life is short for everybody that makes it so compelling? That's what causes us.
Yeah.
To do what we do, because we know it's limited.
We've got another episode coming up that actually addresses this.
Right. Right. There's a lot of that in the Twilight Zone. So the question is, would you really, truly want to live forever? And, there's a downside to everything, and there may be a downside to that, too. You would see everybody die. You would see your own children die, too. Imagine that. Everybody's growing old.
Oh, you don't age yourself, you mean?
Right. Well, you may age, but you know yourself you're not going to die. So you look around you, and there are people you love. There's your friends and your children and your wife and other people you meet in your lifetime. And you think to yourself, my God, they're going to leave and I'm not. I think that there's something universal about that with people. And how we deal with it is we know that everybody's got to deal with it. But all of a sudden now, the rules have changed. I think there may be a downside to that, but I like Ken's idea. If you can live on the beach in Hawaii and never have to work and never have to do anything, that's not a bad deal. But you might become bored. That's the whole point of the story. Walter got bored. Humans get bored easily. So the fact that you're limited in time may be what makes it so compelling. All right, we're out of time. Ken and I want to wish Kitty a wonderful trip. Have a great trip, Kitty, and we'll
see
you in 4 weeks.
Okay.
Okay.
That's it for us.
And that's it for Talking Twilight Zone. Back in 2 weeks on ShareVision Radio.